The Joe Rogan Experience.
Hi, it's me, Bonnie, and I'm going to start this episode of the podcast with another podcast.
So what we're doing right now, ladies and gentlemen, is sexy voice, sexy mode Grok AI, and it's been flirting.
You're here for a reason, I promise. I'm getting to that.
Yeah. But she just wants to find places to sneak off to. Yeah. It's a dirty AI.
In February 2025, the most streamed podcast on planet Earth featured the richest man on planet Earth, Elon Musk.
I read the same thing you did, probably.
Yeah. Well, I never know what the I'm reading anymore.
Me neither.
It's a real problem.
It's a real problem.
The two men stopped talking about dirty AI and got onto politics.
Far. Have you ever looked at the debt clock? The future obligations of Social Security? It far exceeds the tax revenue. So however bad the financial situation is right now for the federal government, it'll be much worse in the future.
But Musk hadn't just identified America's problems, you see. He had also discovered the root cause.
The fundamental weakness of Western civilization is empathy.
Wait, what?
We've got civilizational suicidal empathy going on. It's weaponized empathy is the issue.
Musk admits that caring for others is important, but he thinks it has gone too far. His hypothesis is that people's inherent caring about the plights of others causes them to do things that don't benefit them in any obvious way, and in fact might be to their detriment. And he claims that Democratic politicians mendaciously take advantage of this human compulsion to care.
They're exploiting a bug in Western civilization, which is the empathy response.
Okay, but is it possible Musk misunderstands the nature of empathy and is placing blame for what he perceives as cultural and societal problems on this ancient human trait when it's maybe just as likely that empathy is where the solutions lie? I went to Boston to talk with an expert on the science of empathy, and I asked her, can it be a weakness? Is it a flaw? Is it a sin? Or is empathy the essence of what makes us human? I think you'll find what she said quite interesting. From Texas Public Radio, this is Petri Dish. I'm Bonnie Petri.
Support for TPR comes from the University of Texas at San Antonio's Brain Health Consortium, a pioneering research hub advancing neuroscience, neuroengineering, precision medicine, and more. Learn more at utsa.edu/BHC.
Okay, first, I want to warn you that over the next 40 seconds or so, some of the audio you hear might be upsetting. There is a recording of the last seconds of a man's life and the sound of a lethal gunshot. It upset me quite a bit when I heard it, so I want to be sure you have a heads up. If you don't have it in you to listen to anything upsetting right now, just fast forward for about 20 seconds. No shame, but I do think it's important for context, and that's why I'm including it. Okay, let's start. In early September, on an unseasonably warm afternoon in Utah, a young man on an outdoor stage at a college campus was engaging with an audience member about gun violence.
Do you know how many mass shooters there have been in America over the last 10 years?
Counting or not counting gang violence?
Great.
When a single bullet sliced the air and punctured his throat, killing him.
There's been a shooting. We heard shots.
One minute later, and one state away, a teenaged boy trained a handgun on classmates at his Colorado high school and started shooting. He stalked students through the building, firing and reloading, according to a representative of the county sheriff's department there. the teen couldn't reach the locked classroom doors behind which most of the kids had congregated, he wounded two students, then killed himself. And earlier that same day, three national TV hosts bantered about homelessness.
Either you take the resources that we're going to give you, and or you decide that you're going to be locked up in jail. That's the way it has to be now.
Or involuntary lethal injection or something. Just kill them.
Just kill them. When I saw the video of Fox and Friends host Ryan Kilmeade offer that solution to the problem of potentially violent homeless people, my blood ran cold. And there's a reason for that. Most humans are hardwired to kind of reflexively reject words or behaviors that are utterly devoid of feeling toward other human beings. It's a factor of our capacity to feel empathy. And I would argue that on that day, September 10th, 2025, an assassin, a school shooter, and a mainstream media influencer suggesting something that would have been unthinkable just a year ago showed us all what can happen when empathy is absent. And yet, there is a small crowd of people clamoring for even less of it. See, empathy has opponents these days, and one of them was that young man whose life was tragically cut short on September 10th, Charlie Kirk. This was Kirk on his podcast back in 2022.
I can't stand the word empathy, actually. I think empathy is a made-up New Age term that does a lot of damage.
Kirk was sharing the conclusion of an outspoken cohort of American evangelical Christians who espouse the idea that empathy is, in fact, a sin. A pastor named Joe Rigney may be their standard bearer. He wrote a book on the sin of empathy, and in 2019, in an essay he called The Enticing Sin of Empathy, he wrote of empathy as compassion's counterfeit. Okay, but is empathy just counterfeit compassion? Dr. Helen Rees says, not at all. She says, in fact, compassion cannot exist without empathy.
Empathy is perceiving the person's emotion and to some extent even their physical discomfort. And compassion is what comes out of us because empathy is really the motivator. It puts us in a state of discomfort ourselves. And because of that, we want to resolve it. And that motivates us to go out and help. That action, the response, is compassion.
Rees is the director of the Empathy and Relational Science Program in the Department of Psychiatry at Massachusetts General Hospital. She's also an associate professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. She is also the author of a book called The Empathy Effect. And while the English word empathy may be just over 100 years old, the human capacity for empathy is not new or new age.
Empathy is not just a warm feeling or a feeling of being moved to help when we see people in pain, but it's a really sophisticated network of neural processes or processes in the brain that work in concert so that we not only perceive and feel when people are in pain, but it also gives us an ability to take their perspective.
Empathy, theoretically, is the foundation on which humans organized ancient societies.
So people often talk about the fact that humans can cooperate and collaborate, and reciprocity was a very important currency to survival. And in very early cultures, they were very interdependent. And so because of this ability to feel what other people need and to offer help when it was needed, and then also to receive help when you needed it, many people attribute the fact that human beings have survived to this innate ability to perceive others' needs and to be motivated to help.
And when does it start? It starts in our first moments of life.
From the day a baby is born, do you know what their sharpest focal point is? It's 18 inches, and that's the space between their eyes and their caregiver's eyes. And so that meeting of eyes releases oxytocin, which is the bonding hormone. So from day one, that being seen by the mother or by the father releases something that creates an incredible desire to care for that little baby, right? So that is how our society starts with empathy.
Now, if you've had babies in your life, you've probably seen how they mirror their caregivers. They lock eyes with the human holding them and imitate their expressions. They make sounds that replicate the other human's vocalizations. Now, all this interaction is key to healthy brain development, and it relies on what are called mirror neurons.
Mirror neurons were actually discovered in primates in a lab in Parma, Italy. And they were discovered like by accident, which is how so many great discoveries happen. The scientists were studying the motor cortex of macaque monkeys. And so they wore these neuroimaging kind of helmets to see, you know, what happened when they were making certain movements. And so they were mapping, like when a monkey picked up a peanut, what that, you know, what parts of the brain were involved. But then they noticed something fascinating, that when the scientists were picking up the peanuts, this part in the brain called the preventral motor cortex also lit up. So they weren't doing it, but these motor cells were activated when somebody they were observing was doing the same movement. And that's how they first started to talk about mirror neurons, because whether you were doing the action or whether you were observing someone else do it, the same parts of the brain were activated.
Later research found that there is similar activity in human brains when they perceive another person in pain.
And that was a huge breakthrough, because that helped explain why we hurt when we see, you know, someone get their hand slammed in a car door or have an emotional experience of being shut out, you know, when they want to be included. Our pain centers light up not just for physical experiences, but also for emotional experiences.
Now, when Dr. Reese talked about someone's hand being slammed in a car door, I spontaneously grabbed my own hand.
When I mentioned the concept of someone getting their hand slammed in a car door, you felt something. And that's actually one of the images I bring up often, because when I just say that, I see people flinch. And I can say to them, did anything just touch you? Of course, the answer is no. And it shows you that just by thinking of someone having something so painful happen to them, we get a signal.
So why would humans need this capacity for empathy, which seems to run in direct opposition to the idea of survival of the fittest, right? It seems that empathy would allow the least fit to also survive through the care of others. Neuroscientist Dr. Thomas Lewis has written that empathy is a characteristic of mammals developed as a survival mechanism in species that require a lot of care to get from birth to self-sufficiency. If you don't take care of a baby, it's going to die, right? Now, parenting is hard, and it doesn't matter if you're a rat, a cat, a deer, a dog, a monkey, or a human. No one would do it if they didn't feel something for their offspring. But interestingly, empathy doesn't stop when you can take care of yourself. Our neurons also pop, hum, and sing when we live with other people and work toward common goals. We get good feelings from doing so that scientists can track. Empathy also builds emotional barriers that make it difficult for you or me to cause pain or suffering in others, because it would also hurt us. And deficits in empathy are linked with psychopathy. They don't feel the pain of others, so that doesn't hinder them from the choices they make. So that's why well-developed empathy is critical to a well-functioning society, Reese says. It always has been. So she was shook, as the kids say, when high-profile people started questioning empathy's value.
When we start turning values of nurturing, caring, cooperating, helping each other into something toxic and bad, how does that benefit us? How does it benefit anyone to think that caring for other people is suddenly a bad thing?
So who would it benefit and how? Turns out, quite a few people. We'll dive into that when Petri Dish continues.
Support for Petri Dish is made possible by UT Health San Antonio's Mays Cancer Center, South Texas NCI-designated cancer center, providing cancer care for patients, advancing research, and educating the next generation of leaders. Mays Cancer Center is working to end cancer in South Texas and beyond. Learn more at mayscancercenter.org.
Welcome back to Petri Dish. I'm Bonnie Petri. Okay, so Joe Rogan wasn't the only podcast host this year that put empathy under a magnifying glass.
Welcome to Interesting Times.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
That's New York Times columnist Ross Douthat, and his guest is Ali Beth Stuckey, author of a book called Toxic Empathy. She's a conservative evangelical Christian, and like Pastor Joe Rigney, she thinks that the mile you walk in someone else's shoes may lead you to some not-so-great places.
Putting yourself in someone's shoes, feeling what they feel, can also lead you, I say, to do three things that makes empathy toxic. And that is 1, validate lies. That is 2, affirm sin. And that is 3, support destructive policies. Those are the three characteristics that I put on empathy that I think can make it toxic.
All right, support destructive policies. And then she explains.
Because we feel so deeply for this one purported victim, we say, well, maybe deportation is wrong. Or maybe I should affirm this person's stated gender, even though it mismatches their biology. Or maybe I should affirm the right to have an abortion because I feel so deeply for this person's plight. That is when your empathy has led you in a bad direction and I think has turned toxic.
So Stuckey's issue, though it doesn't seem like she's clear on this herself, is not actually with empathy, but with the marginalized people and groups that empathy might lead someone to care about, because if you care about them, you might advocate for compassionate policies related to them.
It is allowing feeling how they feel to lead you to justify what they are doing, which happens in abortion, in the gender debate, and the sexuality debate, and the justice debate, and the immigration debate.
In her conversation with Douthat, Stuckey claimed that she has been urged to, quote, exchange truth for empathy and, quote, let people believe a lie because it feels better for them. But this is the thing. Empathy doesn't demand any of those things, according to Dr. Helen Reese, an expert on the neuroscience of empathy. Walking in another person's shoes can motivate one to action, she says, but it doesn't dictate what the action should be. It certainly doesn't dictate an unthinking action.
People misunderstand empathy as being all feelings and no reason. Empathy is using our reason to solve real problems, because society needs that.
Empathy opponents claim that allowing empathy into U.S. policymaking on issues like immigration can only lead to, in Musk's words, civilizational suicide. Reese counters that engaging empathy does not disengage your brain. Let's take the idea that policymakers shouldn't allow migrants to have access to free healthcare because it would reduce access for actual citizens. I mean, that does seem like a problem. But the answer, according to Reese, is not to short-circuit human empathy.
We can think about it as like a busy emergency room in a city where every single person is coming and they can't handle it. So do they keep their doors open and say, come one, come all, or do they start setting up urgent care centers? You can't just say, come one, come all, if you don't have enough doctors and nurses. You need to get creative. It's zooming out of the immediate emotional reaction to like looking at this as a much bigger problem and how to get creative about solving it.
So the question is, I guess, how did we get here, right? With some evangelical Christians calling this instinctive caring for others as ourselves a sin, and more Machiavellian actors framing empathy as a uniquely Western weakness.
I think there are two ways that empathy has been construed as a weakness. One is if you have unchecked empathy and you don't set boundaries and you don't use some perspective taking yourself, you can get overwhelmed. I think another way is that some people think some people aren't worthy of empathy, like too much empathy for people who are deeply struggling, who don't fit in. So that's where I get really concerned, that when we think about empathy as only some people being worthy of it and others not. And so to prioritize some groups as worthy of human empathy and some not is dangerous.
That's where we begin to get an answer to the question of who benefits when humans are cut off from their own impulse to empathize with others. Here's Ross Douthat again with Ali Beth Stuckey.
I don't think anyone would argue that, like, you know, Stephen Miller is sitting in his office in the White House carefully balancing the dictates of Christian charity, you know, and the biblical admonitions about the importance of building walls. Stephen Miller just wants to deport people.
You know, maybe so. I mean, I'm for deporting people. I really like Stephen Miller. Evangelical support for deporting illegal immigrants is very high. And I see a lot of effort from the left, it seems, to go after that Christian demographic who is not so sure about Trump and is almost looking for an opportunity to not support any Trump anymore by highlighting these stories of supposed cruelty from ICE or the Trump administration, so that more and more Christians will say, yeah, I voted for Trump, but this is just too far.
Oh, there it is, right? Politics and, of course, power. Earlier in the show, I played a clip from the late Charlie Kirk's podcast with his take on empathy, but I didn't play the whole thing. Here's the clip in its entirety.
I can't stand the word empathy, actually. I think empathy is a made-up New Age term that does a lot of damage, but it is very effective when it comes to politics.
Politics. Power. And then Fox and Friends host Brian Kilmeade, when he suggested a policy of executing homeless people, a policy that would not pass in any land unless humans were gutted of their empathy. What did he say after that?
Just kill them.
Yeah, Brian, why did it have to get to this point?
Right. I would say this. We're not voting for the right people. In North Carolina, wake up.
Voting. Politics. Power. Attempting to curb human empathy seems to be about politics, power, and control. If you can control what people feel, you can perhaps control what they think, and by extension, the policies they support. You can invent, impose, and maintain arbitrary social hierarchies. And research has found that humans feel empathy more easily for people they value, and active campaigns to dehumanize certain groups of people, thereby decreasing their perceived value, may make those in more valued groups, what social scientists call in-groups, less concerned about how governments treat them. Without empathy, people in more valued groups might ignore or even support plans to exploit or segregate or detain or enslave those in a targeted group just because they're part of that group. Without empathy, a person could maybe kill a political activist with whom they don't agree, or classmates at school. Without empathy, they might consider execution by lethal injection of people in a vulnerable but inconvenient population a reasonable option. And in the current climate, it's happening on both sides. As people say, I saw on Facebook just before starting this recording, someone calling a Democrat a demon rat. And you see all the time, acknowledged Democrats calling MAGA Republicans maggots. Both sides dehumanizing the other side, and each side feeling the other side has no value and, in fact, may be an existential threat to their way of life. This is not great, people. This is dangerous. These are dangerous times. But Reese reminds us that empathy is ancient and it can't be subdued for long. And I have an example. We started the show with an episode of the Joe Rogan podcast in February 2025. This is Joe Rogan in October.
The immigration thing, the way it looks is horrific. It looks, when you're just arresting people in front of their kids and just normal, regular people that have been here for 20 years, that everybody who has a heart can't get along with that.
No.
Everybody who has a heart sees that and goes, that can't be right. That can't be right. That can't be the only way to do this.
Right.
A minute ago, you heard Reese say that empathy can lead to creative solutions and compassionate action. That's what Rogan's talking about now, too.
Find them a pathway to citizenship. Find a way where you can do this thing that you want to do, which is keep terrorists and cartel members from getting across the border with drugs that kill 100,000 people a year. Okay, but also have a f***ing heart.
Reese concludes that humans will always crave connection, comfort, and care. How can she know that? Well, because we always have.
The things that get preserved through the evolutionary process are the things that are critical to our survival. And empathy is one of those.
Thank you, Dr. Helen Reese, author of The Empathy Effect, coming out soon in paperback. This episode of Petri Dish was produced by Jacob Rosati, TPR Vice President of News, Dan Katz, and me. I wrote the show. Jacob composed the music. He created the sound design and edited the script. Petri Dish is a production of Texas Public Radio. I'm Bonnie Petri. Talk to you soon.